However, he acknowledged to himself that McNamara had taken him by surprise. Boris had not anticipated that he would move before the sun had set. He had expected to be able to take up a position above the camp in the thorn patch and to be able to get off two careful, well-aimed shots before he was forced to run. It was also part of his calculations that once he had dropped McNamara, his men would not be eager to follow up with too much dispatch. Boris planned to make a running retreat, stopping at every defensible strong point to fire a few shots, knock down one or two of them, and keep the pursuit circumspect and cautious, until they eventually lost their taste for the game and let him go. However, all that had now changed. He would have to take the first opportunity that presented itself. Almost certainly a moving target, and as soon as he had fired, he would be exposed on the path up the cliff face. His one advantage here was that his hunting rifle was a superbly accurate piece, whereas McNamara's men were all armed with AK-47 assault rifles. Rapid firing, but notoriously wild at longer range, and more especially in the hands of these Schufter. With proper training, the fighting tribesmen of Africa made some of the finest troops in the world. They possessed all the necessary skills, with one exception. They were notoriously poor marksmen. He lay flat on the ledge, and the rock under him was so hot from the direct sunlight that it burned painfully even through his clothing. He pulled the pack from his back and set it up in front of him, settling the forestock of the rifle over it to give himself a dead rest. He peered through the telescope, wriggling into a comfortable position, sighting on a small rock beside the main trail, and then swinging the barrel from side to side to make certain that he had a clear arc of fire. Satisfied that this was the best stance he could find in the short time left to him, he set the rifle aside and picked up a handful of dirt. He rubbed this gently into his face, and the sweat turned it to mud that coated his pale skin and dulled the shine that an alert scout might pick out at long range. His last concern was to check the angle of the sun, and to satisfy himself that it was not reflecting off the lens of his scope or off any of the metal parts of the rifle. He reached over and pulled at the branch of the shrub beside him so that it cast its shadow over the weapon. At last he settled down behind the rifle and cuddled the butt into his shoulder, regulating his breathing to a deep, slow rhythm, dropping his pulse rate and steadying his hands. He did not have long to wait. He heard the bird call again, but this time much nearer at hand. It was answered immediately from the far side of the trail, down closer to the river bank. "The flankers will be having difficulty maintaining station over this terrain," he grinned without humour, a death's head grimace. "They will be bunching and straggling." As he thought it, a man came into view around the bend of the trail, about 500 metres dead ahead. Boris picked him up in the magnified field of the lens. It was a typical African guerrilla, a Schufter dressed in a tattered and faded motley of camouflage and civilian clothing, festooned with pack and water bottle, ammunition and grenades, carrying his AK at high port. He halted the moment he came through the turn and crouched into cover behind a boulder at the side of the trail. For a long minute he surveyed the lie of the land ahead of him, his head turning slowly from side to side. At one point it seemed to be staring directly at Boris, who held his breath and lay as still as the rock beside him. But finally the Schufter straightened up and gave a hand signal to those out of sight behind him. Then he came on down the trail at a trot. When he had covered 50 metres, the rest of the party began to appear, keeping their intervals as precisely as beads on a string. It would not be possible to enfilade this line even with an RPD from a prepared position.
"Good," Boris approved. "These are crack troops. Mech must have hand-picked them."
He watched them through the lens, examining the features of each man as he came into view, searching for McNamara. There were 7 of them spread out down the trail now, but still no sign of their leader. The man on the point drew level with Boris's position and then went on past him. A pair of flankers passed directly beneath where he lay, rustling softly in the scrub not more than 12 paces from him. He lay like a stone and let them go. The rest of them passed his position, well spaced and moving swiftly. For some minutes after the last of them had gone, the gorge seemed deserted and devoid of all human presence. Then there was another stealthy movement out there.
"The rear guard," Boris grunted softly. "Mech is keeping the woman at the rear, his new plaything. He is taking great care of her."
He slipped the safety catch on the rifle gently, making certain that no alien metallic sound fell on the heated and hushed air.
"Now let them come," he breathed. "I would take Mech first. Nothing fancy, no headshots, squarely in the center of the chest. The woman will freeze when he goes down. She does not have the reflexes of a warrior. She will give me a second, unhurried shot. At this range, there will be no question of a miss. Right between those pretty little black tits of hers."
He became sexually charged by the image of blood and violent death set opposite Tessé's loveliness and grace.
"I might even have a chance to get one of the others, but I can't bank on that. These men are good. More likely that they will dive into cover before I have even had time to kill the woman."
He watched the faces of the rearguard as one at a time, carefully spaced, they came into view. Each time he felt his heart trip with disappointment. In the end, there were three of them on the path, moving past him at a steady, businesslike jog trot, but no sign of Mech and the woman. The rearguard disappeared down the path, and the small sounds of their progress dwindled into silence. Boris lay alone on the ledge, his heart thumping, and the sour taste of disappointment in the back of his throat.
"Where are they?" he thought bitterly. "Where the hell is Mech?"
And the obvious answer to his own question occurred to him immediately. They had taken a different trail. Mech had used this patrol as a decoy to lure him away. He lay quietly for a measured 5 minutes by his wristwatch, just in case there might be more men coming up the trail. His mind was racing. His last definite placing of Tessé had been the glimpse of her footprint on the trail at the far bend of the Oxbow. That was several hours ago, and if she and Mech had given him the slip, they could be anywhere by now. Mech might have won himself a start of a full day or more. It might take Boris that long to work the spoor through. Feeling waves of anger overwhelm him, he had to close his eyes and fight it off in order to keep his sense of reason from being swamped. He had to think clearly now, not to go rushing at the problem like a wounded buffalo. He knew that this was one of his weaknesses. He had to keep tight control of himself. When he opened his eyes again, his anger had become cold and functional. He knew precisely what he had to do, and the order in which he must do it. The very first task was to sweep and check the back trail. He had to establish the point at which Mech had left the main detachment of Schufter. He slipped down off the ledge and through the scrub to the open trail. Still anti-tracking, but moving swiftly, he made his way upstream back towards the patch of thorn scrub where the party of Schufter had lain up in the heat of the day. The first thing he noticed was that the pair of kites had gone. But he did not take this as proof that the bush was deserted, and began to circle it carefully. First, he worked the incoming trail on the far side of the patch of bush. Although several hours old now, it was still clear enough to read. Suddenly, he stopped in the centre of the trail and felt the hair rise on his forearms and down the back of his neck as he stared at the sign in the dust of the path. He realised that he had walked into Mech's trap. There lay the distinctive imprint of a barter tennis shoe. Mech and the woman had gone into the patch of scrub and had not come out again. They were still in there, and Boris was seized by the strong premonition that Mech was watching him even at that moment, over the open sights of his AK. While he was out in the open like this, stooped over the spoor, Boris was completely vulnerable. Hurling himself sideways off the path, he landed like a cat in the wire grass beside it, with the rifle at the ready. It took many minutes for his heartbeats to return to normal, and then he rose again into a stealthy crouch and began circling the patch of scrub very cautiously. His nerves were as taut as guitar strings, and his pale eyes darted from side to side. His finger lay upon the trigger of the .30-06, and he kept the muzzle weaving slowly like the head of a cobra ready to strike in any direction. He moved down towards the bank of the river, where the noise of the rapids would mask any sound he might make. But when he had almost reached the shelter of the house-sized boulder that he had noticed from the mountain crest, he froze again. He had heard a sound that carried over the sound of Nile waters, a sound so incongruous in this place and at this time that for a moment he doubted his own hearing. It was the sound of a woman's laughter, sweet and clear as the tinkle of a crystal chandelier swinging in the breeze. The sound came from below him, from the river bank beyond the tumbled boulder. He crept towards the boulder, determined to use it for cover, and as a vantage point from which he could cover the bank beyond it. But before he reached it, he heard the splash of some heavy object striking the surface of the river, and an excited female squeal, both playful and provocative. Reaching the side of the boulder, and keeping close under its protective bulk, he stole towards the corner, from which he could overlook the gravel bank beyond. Then, peeping cautiously around the angle of the boulder, he stared in amazement. He could barely believe what he was seeing. He could not credit this kind of stupidity from a man like McNimmer. This was the hard man, the seasoned warrior and survivor of 20 years of bloody bush war, acting like a lovesick teenage booby. McNimmer had sent his men away so that he could be alone to frolic with his new paramour. Boris took time to make absolutely certain that this was not some elaborate trap that had been set for him. It seemed too fortuitous, too heaven-sent to be really true. He searched every inch of the bank in both directions for hidden gunmen before he smiled his cold little smile.
Of course they are alone. Mac would never let one of his men see Tessa naked like this.
His smile grew broader as he recognized the full extent of his luck.
He must have gone crazy. Did he not realize that I would follow him? Did he think he was far enough ahead to be able to indulge himself like this? Is there anything in this world as stupid and as short-sighted as a standing prick?
Boris was gloating delightedly now.
The couple had stripped off their clothes and left them in a pile on the beach of grey basalt gravel in the shade of the tall boulder. They were splashing together in the slack water of the river at the edge of the main current. Both of them were stark mother naked. McNimmer was broad-shouldered, with a heavily muscled back and hard, tight buttocks. Beside him, Tessa was slim as a river reed, her waist tiny and her hips narrow. Her skin was the colour of wild honey. They were completely absorbed in each other, without eyes or ears for anything else in this world.
He must have left men guarding his back trail.
Boris gave Mac the benefit of some sense.
He never expected me to be ahead of him on the trail. He thinks they are completely secure. Look at the fool,
he gloated, as Mac chased the girl, and she let herself be caught. They fell into the shallow water, locked in each other's embrace, mouths seeking each other as they surfaced again, laughing as the water streamed down their darkly beautiful faces. The epitome of handsome masculinity and lovely womanhood. The image of an African Adam and Eve captured for a moment in their own little carefree paradise. Boris tore his eyes from them and looked to where their clothing had been abandoned on the gravel bar. Mac's AK rifle lay carelessly on the top of his camouflage jacket, within a few paces of where Boris stood. He crossed the open gravel bar with a few quick strides, picked up the AK, unclipped the curved magazine, and dropped it into his pocket, ejected the round from the chamber, and let it fly away into the gravel, replaced the unloaded rifle on the jacket, and rapidly returned to the lee of the boulder. Both Mac and Tessa remained utterly oblivious to what had happened. Boris stood there quietly in the shadow of the rock, watching them at play in the river. They were almost childlike in their love and their complete preoccupation with each other. Tessa at last broke from Mac's embrace and left the water. She came up the gravel bar, running long-legged and coltish, her wet silken breasts swinging and jostling each other at each stride as she looked back at him over her shoulder in open invitation. Mac followed her out, the water glistening in the dense curls of his barrel chest, his genitals weighty and puissant.